Thank you very much. Also, Sis Zola, when you guys make copies for us, if there are graphs and stuff like that, we can't see anything if it's black and white. It doesn't help us. As moon, it's black and white. The blackness is on top of the what is written up there, so we can't make up. At least the saga one is in color. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Once again, my name is Councillor Charles Pekunzi Stofile, from SALGA National Executive Committee. Let me just make quick comments, and the person that is going to lead our presentation is lunch, and as you are about to go to lunch, so lunch is going to entertain us with the presentation. SALGA is an association of local government. Its mandate is to lobby, advocate, and represent the sphere of government. It has been its engagement and agreement that it is important to relook into the public office bearers as guided by the Public Office Bearers Act. And we also take that medical aid, pension fund, abroad remuneration issues. And it is prudent that you approach it from that perspective because there are the feeders in the broad area. And we resolve in our recent interaction in the NSA that we will further engage with all those that are involved so that we attempt in South Africa to build a single public office bearers remuneration instrument that will cover the issues of medical aid and pension fund. You'll note in our report we'll be giving you about the history and the status of the current environment in the local state and ultimately end up with the recommendation. And therefore, let me take this opportunity and ask Lange to take us through.
Thank you very much, Councillor Stoffel. And again, greetings to members of the committee and others present. We perhaps we should apologize that there are some members that may be well versed around the issues of remuneration of councillors and related benefits, but we had assumed that there are some who do not know. So we apologize to those that may know, because we thought it would be important to provide a context so that when we make proposals, it's within us having the same understanding around the benefits that informs councillors. When we speak about councillors, just to throw some numbers so that we can understand what we're talking about, we have 9,306 councillors. 9,306 councillors across 257 municipalities. We have a strange arrangement. We call it strange because it doesn't make sense in practice, but we have a strange arrangement of having full-time and part-time councillors. The reason why it's strange is because in practice there's no such thing as a part-time councillor. But in theory, there is part-time and full-time councillors. When we say full-time, we are talking about, of the 9,306, approximately 1,500 being full-time. And the remaining being part-time.
The full-time?
Around 1,500. Full-time. The only difference between full-time and part-time is the salary package, as I'm saying, but in practice there is no difference. Having said that, Chair, there are a few things we would take you through around these councillors and their related benefits. The first one is that in terms of the legislation, there is a definition of public office bearers, and it lists who are public office bearers. So you look at the slide, it starts with the president, and it includes at the end judges and magistrates. So the list includes councillors as public office bearers. Unfortunately, that's where it starts and that's where it ends, because as it relates to councillors, everything else is different to other public office bearers. Why do we say everything else is different? I'm going to answer that question through the next few slides. The first one is perhaps to amplify that there is legislation, the Municipal Finance Management Act, that says that a councillor may only be remunerated in terms of the framework of the law. I don't think there's any other legislation that says that MPs and MPLs and other public office bearers must be remunerated in terms of the framework. But for some reason, there's a distrust that you must add for councillors that they can only be paid in terms of the framework. And where they are paid, whether it's in cash or in kind, outside of that framework, it is regarded as fruitless and wasteful and irregular expenditure. So that's a key difference between councillors and other public office bearers. But when you look at the system to determine the remuneration and related benefits of councillors, it differs from other public office bearers. And if we are not aware, I think members of the committee are fairly aware of what the process is that applies to yourselves as public representatives at national and provincial level. So everyone has referred to the independent commission. They make the recommendations. The president considers those recommendations. The president gazettes the remuneration. And then it is implemented, done. For councillors, the same commission makes recommendations. The minister responsible for cooperative governance and traditional affairs, he develops a draft notice first. That draft notice is sent to provinces, to MECs in the provinces, to SALGA. Can you give us your comments on my thinking? The provinces must respond back to the minister, the SALGAs must respond to the minister. The minister then looks at the comments, the minister then issues a gazette. All of us would then assume that's the end of it, as you would see with national and provincial. Unfortunately, it is not. So the next step then is a council must meet. Each of the 257 councils must meet. It must look at this gazette by the minister. It must determine what is the appropriate level of remuneration to be paid. Once council has taken that decision, it must also consider whether it is affordable to pay those salaries. Because the salaries of councillors, it's paid for from municipal revenue. It's not paid for from the fiscus. So the council must determine whether it would be affordable to remunerate its councillors in terms of that notice of the minister. Once council has resolved and it has satisfied itself that it is affordable, it doesn't end there either, because it must now be sent to an MEC in the province, and the MEC must then look at whether the municipality has taken the right decision and indeed that it is affordable. Then the MEC comes back and concurs or does not concur or raise certain issues. It is only once the MEC is satisfied that a council can then implement. So it's a very painful exercise. Why is it painful? Because let's give an example of last year. The commission made its recommendations in October, and the municipal financial year starts in July, 1st of July. So the commission makes its recommendations in October. The minister issues the final notice on 15 December. So 2 months later, the minister issues his final notice. Now 15 December, most people are on holiday. Councils are on recess. But remember, council must meet and MEC must give concurrence and then it is implemented. So most councils only implement in January of the next year. Some, where the MEC does not give concurrence, only implement in April, which is 2 months away from the end of the financial year. So it creates serious difficulties for us at the local government level. But the point we want to make is that we have said there are public office bearers. But yet, when you look at the local sphere of government, there is curiously a different process that applies. But we want to take it further by indicating when that notice is issued, it then covers comprehensively all of the benefits of councillors, separating full-time councillors from part-time councillors, and extending the benefits that you see on this list, which for purposes of this conversation also includes medical aid, but I will come back to that in the next few slides. When I indicated that a council must meet and consider the benefits, there is a requirement that every single council must be graded. What does the grading mean? It means that a municipality must look at its population for its area, firstly. Secondly, it must look at its income for the previous financial year. And in the notice, you get points. You get points for the number of population, you get points for your income for the previous financial year, and then there's a formula that is applied that then gives you a grade. So in the South African local government context, the grade is grade 1 to grade 6. Grade 1 being the lowest, grade 6 being the highest. So generally your metropolitans are grade 6 and your small municipalities are grade 1. So it's population and that is income. Just to give you an example. So when we look at population, we look at the community survey that was conducted in 2016, which is much, much better. In the past, we could only use the census. And remember, census are only conducted every 10 years. So whether there's growth or no growth in your area from a population point of view, we could not use that in the past. Fortunately now, with the community survey, the last one done in 2016, 2 years later, but we can use that as a more updated population figure. In terms of the income, we look at the financial statements of the municipality because it's very reliable in terms of the income, and then it will determine the grade. So it is also important to note that there are two grading systems. There's a grading system for councillors and there's a grading system for municipal employees. It is not the same. But what does the grade then mean? So we are presenting on this slide based on, if you look at the far left of the slide, it shows you the grade 6 to 1. Those are the salaries that are being paid. So if you are mayor full-time, this is full-time. If you are mayor, the highest earning mayor is just under 1.3 million per month, per year. And so a speaker, a member of the mayoral committee or the executive committee, and a chairperson of the Section 79 committee. Those are the different salaries that are being paid. Then also on part-time, so these are the part-time figures that are being paid. So just to contextualize this, so the lowest earning councillor earns 228,000. There it is on the slide, bottom right in yellow. The lowest earning councillor earns 228,000, which translates to just under 20,000 per month. Well, I become very concerned when I heard this morning that PAMED could cost up to 14,000 if not more. Well, I'm not sure if we'll attract any counselors, because if you earn 20,000, you will not pay 14,000 for medical aid. That one is not going to happen. Maybe we'll be able to attract a metro mayor that earns 100,000 a month before tax to pay that type of medical aid contribution. So these are the salary scales that we have. And in those salaries, that's a total remuneration package. It's before tax, and it includes all allowances. So everything is in that 228,000. When you say everything, this is what we mean. So in that 20,000 per month before tax, there's a motor vehicle allowance, there's a housing allowance, there's a pension fund contribution, there's medical aid, and what remains is the basic salary. Cell phone is on top, fortunately, is on top of the total remuneration package, as you would see at the bottom of the slide. We are also fortunate that in addition to that total remuneration package, there's a risk insurance that is being paid through this SASSA cover. And I think we would all know why that is necessary. We often read in the newspapers how councillors are being attacked, how their houses are burnt, how their property is damaged, and that is a risk cover they get in such unfortunate instances. And then when they travel reimbursement, and then the cell phone allowance, as I've earlier indicated. So that's the total package plus the small additional benefits. We also thought we should remind members of the committee that we have metropolitan, district, and local municipalities. So when each of those municipalities, 257, when they meet, they must first determine their grade. And that, based on the population and the income, the grade is then determined. They will then be remunerated against that grade 3 package. But we also have district municipalities where you have a number of local municipalities in it. To give you an example, just outside Cape Town, there's a district called Cape Winelands. I think we all can relate to Cape Winelands. But in the district, so there's a district council, but in the district you have municipalities such as Drakenstein and Stellenbosch as examples. Now, the district council composition, so Cape Winelands composition, it has appointed councillors, meaning councillors are representing the locals, meaning the Stellenbosch and the Drakenstein in the district. Plus they also have your, what we call your directly elected through the PR system from each party into that district. So you have appointed councillors coming from the local municipality, and then you have those directly elected at the district level making up the district council. Now there are also complications, because when you come from the local, you also get paid in the local. But then you are given additional responsibilities to go and represent that local in the district. So you must also get some remuneration. What happens in most instances is that the local municipality has a higher grade than the district municipality, meaning you are given extra work, but you're already getting paid more as a local councillor and a district councillor. It creates a lot of complications in the space, including who is responsible for what payments. So there is some guidance that we give on an annual basis on how we then try and manage the payments of local appointed councillors in the district, etc. But it creates a number of complications. Whilst the focus today is not on pension fund, we thought we would just touch on pension fund quickly, because it's very similar to medical aid. So as I've said, you have the total package, that 20,000, it includes pension fund. every councillor has a discretion to join a pension fund or not join a pension fund. First, when you decide to join a pension fund, you can join any pension fund of your choice. So there is no, there is freedom. You can choose whichever fund you want to join. There is a fund called the Municipal Councillors Pension Fund. It has its own challenges, but a large number of councillors are members of that pension fund, and they then make contributions to that particular pension fund. But there's also a large number of councillors that contribute to other pension funds. But more concerning is that there are councillors that do not contribute to any pension fund, because remember, there's no obligation on them, and they would rather use their money to do other things than investing in their pension. And it becomes fairly evident once we have had elections that those councillors that do not return as councillors and did not contribute to a pension fund, they are really on the street with absolutely nothing. Whereas at least those that have contributed to a pension fund at least has access to the benefits of that particular pension fund. For medical aid, very similar. There is, in that 20,000 rands, there's also medical aid contribution. A counselor can decide to join a medical aid or not join a medical aid at all. When they decide to join a medical aid, they can join any medical aid of their choice. However, if you are, the exception is that where you are a part-time counselor, you could also have another job. So for instance, you find teachers being doubling up as counselors. Where you are a teacher and you subscribe to a medical aid, you can't have another medical aid with counsel. So that's the only exception, that you cannot have more than one medical aid when you have one outside of counsel. So that is where it stands. So for both medical aid and pension fund, it is discretionary, firstly. Secondly, where you choose to subscribe, you can subscribe to any pension fund or medical aid of your choice. But because of the discretion, many do not subscribe at all to both pension fund and medical aid. Now, having said that, there are a few proposals, few recommendations we would want to make, is that if we want to ensure that councillors are indeed treated as public office bearers, there are serious decisions that would have to be taken. The first one is to treat them as public office bearers. Not necessarily to say, and that is not the SAUCA position, so that I can manage your expectations. We are not saying councillors must be paid the same as MPs and MPLs. We are saying there should be equitable treatment of councillors, such that they are able to deliver on this mandate and in fact be the face of government on the ground. And in order to do so, we are saying that the first thing would be to make pension fund and medical aid compulsory, so that we have them participating in those schemes. This morning, other presenters went and motivated why people should be in these schemes. There are real benefits attached there too. Those benefits should be extended to councillors. Secondly, we hold a strong view that perhaps we should have a single pension fund, a single medical aid that covers all public office bearers, including councillors. So make it compulsory, create a single platform. So if we are saying PAMED is that platform, let it be that platform for medical aid. But then we must also, from a local government point of view, talk around the funding. Because as I have just said to you, having heard the story this morning, councillors would not be able to afford a permit. that they will not be able to afford a permit on the current benefits that they receive as remuneration. But if the funding comes from the national fiscus, certainly it would be more attractive for them to join. So if you look at a suggestion that says, let's extend permit to include councillors, it makes sense, but it would have a number of conditions attached thereto. And those conditions are embedded in these recommendations that we are making. Otherwise, you would extend it, but it would just be a nice to have, but you would have very little participation from councillors in that arrangement, because there are other issues that must be addressed together with extending it to for their participation. And that's the biggest risk that would be attached to just extending but not addressing other structural issues related to the remuneration benefits that are extending to councillors, such that the slide that reflects all of those who are public office bearers is a true reflection in practice. And that's the short presentation. Chair, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Lance, for that presentation. We will then take the magistrates, like we did in the morning, and taking both presentations, and then we'll then come with questions and comments. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and all members. My presentation will be even much shorter. A lot has been said that also has an effect on what I have to present here. The trustees of Farmate embarked on an investigation into the possibility of the magistracy joining Farmate during 2006 to 2010. And the trustees, however, indicated after the investigation that they cannot allow membership of magistrates as a result of the provisions of the Parliament Act and the proclamations issued in terms thereof, which do not provide for membership of magistrates, which was the situation that I understood it. Now, it was furthermore indicated that the admission of magistrates to the scheme would have a considerable negative impact on the solvency ratio of Parliament, as well as on the reserves, as most members claiming long before contribution to the reserves. A survey was thereafter done under all magistrates to find out how they feel about this, and more than at that stage were the figures. 90% of the magistrates were not interested to join Parliament, and specifically in view of the non-affordability of the contributions without an increase in medical subsidy. So it's the problem, as indicated earlier, is not always the cost but the salary issue. The matter was not pursued any further, and all magistrates were then informed accordingly. Since 1 November 2003, magistrates and judges were included in the definition of office bearer in Section 1 of the Independent Commission for Remuneration of Public Office Bearers. The remuneration of magistrates consists of a basic salary of 70% of the total remuneration package, 9.1% of the total remuneration package to the government employees fund, pension fund, and 20.9% of the total remuneration package as a flexible portion, which could be structured for inter alia medical aid contribution. Now, the flexible portion is taxable in full. So magistrates furthermore contribute a further 7.5% of the basic salary to the pension fund, which contribution constitutes 14.35% of the total remuneration package. no provision has been made for an exact subsidy for medical aid. When the remuneration of magistrates was structured on a total remuneration package in 2007, the amount of 15,600 per annum, that's 1,300 per month, was added to the Medicaid purposes. This amount, as part of the TRP annual increase since the then below, has been below the CPI. Now, the Independent Commission for the Remuneration of Public Office Bearers has embarked on a major review that has been mentioned earlier, and the outcome thereof is still to be awaited. Magistrates are presently members of various medical aid schemes, while some magistrates registered as a dependent on their spouse's medical aid scheme, and some are not members of a medical aid scheme. This is also interesting that if your wife is a public servant, she can belong to GEMS, and then you can be a dependent on her. But we cannot, as magistrates, are prohibited from belonging to GEMS, because those are for public servants. And just a side remark is that GEMS, persons that belong to GEMS, get a contribution from the state, and they are allowed to belong to other medical aid. But if they resign from GEMS, their subsidy stops if they want to go over to another medical aid scheme. So it's a decision, like in everything in life, that choices have to be made, and it has implications. I don't know if the persons that are involved are always aware of the implications of their choices, but that is a situation that I have not heard in this matter. The current conditions of employment of magistrates do not compel magistrates to be a member of the medical scheme, so you don't have to belong to one. The judicial staff establishment of the magistracy is over 2,000, of which 354 are at this stage vacant. It is suggested then that the ad hoc joint committee considers to mandate Parliament to conduct an investigation into the possibility of magistrates joining Parliament, taking into consideration the applicable legislation, the responsibility of the Independent Commission for the Remuneration of Public Office Bearers, and the current major review, as well as the de facto position regarding magistrates and medical aid schemes. Just to mention something also of the background, the cost matter. Magistrates are not members of restricted schemes, and it is therefore recommended that the increases for open schemes be considered when looking at the position of magistrates. Open schemes have always increased their contributions by more than restricted schemes have, but this trend was lower in 2011 and 2017. So the average increase for open schemes and remuneration increases during 2009 to 2017 period was 11% and 5% respectively. So the average gross contribution increase for open schemes was 11%, and the remuneration increase was 5.6%. So it was it's just going backwards all the time. If we say that at that stage 90% were not in favour of, I don't know if we can conclude that 10% would be would want to join, but of course they are prevented from doing so at this stage. And I think it's a matter of if choices are given, because I think each matter or family or has to be considered on its own merits. It could be more better or affordable for a person to a magistrate to join Parliament, as for the magistrate colleague next door would feel no, in his or her personal circumstances, it's not a viable option. That's all I have to contribute at this stage. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for the presentation. Can we engage on the two presentations? Honorable Mukwele, Honorable Kiani.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks for the presentation. This matter now brings us to the issue that I've alluded to earlier today, to say the legislation that we are currently dealing with now had its own objectives of that time. Now we are faced with the real reality that one, in terms of Public Office Bearers Act, we have put another arm of state as a public office bearer. And we didn't also look into the matter of magistrates, for instance. Magistrates are considered as public office bearers, but on the other side, they still subscribe to public servants. And we have councillors that are public office bearers, but in terms of the spheres of governance, they are also independent with their own unique legislation that prohibits them to access benefits of other public office bearers. And also, as part of NCOP, SALGA sits in terms of Chapter 5 or Chapter 4 of the Constitution. It allows SALGA to sit in the NCOP. And once you have that special seat of Parliament, it means then whatever that happens within the parameters of Parliament, you must by any way benefit. So, Judge, I think we need to sit, and the technocrats that are in this house, we need to sit and align properly our legislation, because we have so many discrepancies. Each and every time when we have to deal with a particular matter, it now opens up so many loopholes that we are having. Look, we just came here for permit, right? And then as I'm listening to the presentation of magistrates and the presentation of councillors, it now says, but where are we as a country? So my submission to both presentations, Chair, is that we need to have, I don't know, I'm told as a subcommittee, because I'm not a member of the subcommittee, there was a workshop, but I think we need to have this thing processed properly, so that when as a committee takes a decision, we take a decision that is well informed, and where the decision that will not at the end put us as parliament in a situation that other organizations or stakeholders will take us to court for excluding them or for taking decisions that will end up as parliament excluding other stakeholders. I agree fully with the frustration that the SALGA is heavy. If we can remember what is the role and the mandate of the local government sphere, that's where services are supposed to be. And that's where we see non-performance of municipalities. I will cite an example from where I come from in Northwest. Out of 19 municipalities, 12 of them can't function on their own. And out of that, 18 of them are involved in fruitless and wasteful expenditures. So what is the root cause of this thing? Councillors, you'll find councillors dying and being buried as paupers because they can't afford, they don't have access to benefits. Also, we speak about, at its sense, service delivery. They are unable to do their actual mandate. And as public office bearers, as per the legislation, they must form part of the provincial parliament and provincial medical aid scheme act. But because also of the manner in which the system of local governance is, the grading, you put in the grading, there are municipalities where, like Moretele in the Northwest, they don't even have source of income. They depend on grants. They can't even raise their own revenue. It means those municipalities, you can just imagine how the council operates there. So I don't know, Chair, what can we do, but definitely something. Maybe we can start this as the fifth parliament to see to it that, I don't know how we are going to do it. Technocrats will assist us on how to structure this thing, to say we need a proper alignment of governance. And if ever there is a, I don't know whether you call it a leg or a sphere or an arm of government that is not producing results, why do we have it in government? Why do we have that if it cannot goes to where we want? So we really need to sit as parliament, as judiciary, as local government and provinces in one room, have a seminar of some sort with technocrats assisting each other, so that when we get into the sixth parliament, at least there is some framework that is drafted that will assist us if we want to include any sphere or any arm into the thing. We also include, we can also, if it comes to a push chair, we can do what we did with the section 25 of the constitution, the amendment of the constitution. We have the ad hoc committee. That ad hoc committee, maybe we can use it also to see to it that can't we also, after dealing with a particular section in the constitution, can't we also look into another sections of the constitution that will allow the country to move forward? and then we deal with those legislations that were there in the apartheid system that are not assisting us. If we repeal those legislations, so be it. If we amend them, so be it, so that it can they can work to our benefit. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Mukwele. The workshop that you're referring to, you were there in Kudu. That's the only workshop that we had. It was the ad hoc. Yeah, that's the ad hoc committee. All members were there. Honorable Tian.
Thank you very much, Chairman. I think it's only proper that we should appreciate the two presentations. I'm very happy, Chair, because both presentations are not antagonistic. Neither are they combative. All they've done is to put the names on the table, very humbly so. So that we all understand where we are. It is quite clear, Chairperson, that we are dealing here with the monster that was created in the past. Unfortunately, we have to unbundle that monster now in such a way that will allow us, you know, to create a new baby out of the whole situation. I think both presentations, Chair, contributes to us finally finding a solution. We are going to have to think very, very radically because we are not going to modify what is there, but we are going to have to reconstruct something that will be able to stand the test of time. It's clear that you know the manner in which the whole system was planned in the past was a little bit strange, you know. And obviously, it is necessary that as we consider possible solutions, one of the first steps would be to say all public office bearers should belong together. And I agree with our colleague there from SALGA when they refer to issues of benefits and so on and other things. Clearly those must be upgraded to reasonable levels. So they are not saying they don't want to join us. That is what makes me very angry. They've just referred to reality, to the stumbling blocks in terms of current legislation. So what this means, it means we're going to have to be bold. As this subcommittee, we're going to put some proposals together and we'll discuss them in plenary of ad hoc. And once we've agreed there, we'll put our proposals to plenary in parliament so that those issues are discussed. The fact that magistrates and judges, you know, ideologically are supposed to, you know, in terms of the trias politica, to be belonging to the judiciary, should not necessarily dissuade us, you know, from taking very, very bold steps. Because here we're trying to create something new. We must not be afraid and we must not be narrow in our approach and try and do what has been done in Australia or whatever, or in Germany and so on. We must look at the political environment in our country now and take the kind of decisions that will enable us to make some progress forward without undermining the strategic objective, the strategic thrust of government in ensuring that there is transformation in the country. So I think this can be done. We are not doing it for ourselves, we are doing it for future generations. This is our responsibility. In years to come, they will say the fifth parliament, you know, put down the first, you know, building blocks for finding solutions to problems that were created a long time ago. So I'm very positive, Chair. I think we must not intimidate ourselves with the kind of hurdles that we are faced with. It is our responsibility in this fledgling democracy of ours, you know, to begin now making those strides that will take us out of the rut that we find ourselves in. It's going to be a unique situation, but I think we're going to have to persuade Parliament to look at issues the way we are going to see them, Chair. So as soon as we are alone, we'll then begin, you know, to indicate what we think needs to happen. And once there is agreement there, we'll take the process forward. We're very encouraged, and we believe that we're going to find solutions, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Kiani. Honourable Packer.
Chair, I think the latter speaker has captured some of my elements that I was going to pose for this. Because the presentation from Salga and the magistrate vindicates some of the perspectives that have been articulated informally and formally. Because we always say we are a unitary state, but the reality is we are just a unitary state in youth, not in practice. And the jumble of inconsistencies that exist deepens the material inequalities in our society. It is ridiculous even to that the very same state apparatus, how do you distinguish magistrates from judges? And the magistrates are saying, no, we can join PAMET, but for us it's unaffordable. Let alone that some of us, we are carried by our spouses, whether a husband or wife. But it's a ridiculous and pathetic situation, which needs an imperious intervention. And I want to say, Co-Chair, if you know my man, we are planted, because we are sharing this meeting, which honorable members, this committee should surface that process. Confidently surface that process and surface such discussions. We are conscious and alive to the mandate and the brief of this committee. But remember, we are policymakers and lawmakers. I always believe that, and articulate anyway, that policymakers, they have a responsibility to assess and analyze, study the impact of the policies that we make. Because policy is made to impact on the lives of people. And if that policy is not assisting and reducing and closing the gap on the material inequalities, that policy or law have to be tampered with. That's my precise hard attitude. Now, this process, of course, caution, will have to be a twofold process. Twofold process in the sense that we isolate issues. Remember, we have mandate on PAMET. We'll deal with issues that deals with PAMET and the recommendations thereof. We'll capture the kernel of all the presentations that have been made. But then the second process will be what affects the process that seeks to take us to the objective of the formation of this ad hoc committee. These are the implications, these are the factors that will affect us not to holistically and in totality achieve. For instance, if I can be practical, you say magistrates want to join parliament, but it's just unaffordable. And you say magistrates are part of the state apparatus. SARIGA, you say SARIGA members are public representatives or public office bearers. But this is how they are being straitjacketed, all that. You mentioned all those things. After you have, as a committee, of course, dealt with the recommendations, now on the basis of such, you are able to say, on this issue that affects councillors, affects your magistrates, as a subcommittee, we recommend this particular package of recommendations, which we believe must be explicit, which we believe must trigger and surface a discussion on these pieces of legislation. I'm giving direction now as a chair, co-chair of this committee. You're talking to your side notes there, which I believe also are important, those notes. I don't know how we're going to handle that, to be part of your main submission. I'm saying that precisely because we listen when people speak or talk. And when we craft the report must capture the fundamental elements of the presentations and submissions that are made to this committee. Now, I want to suggest and recommend that whatever that you are reading on the sideline of your presentation, maybe you can write it or give it to our officials so that it's captured on our final report that will capture the recommended, the way forward, Chair. I wanted to say that. Because as parliament, we have transformative power. The difference is, how do we use that transformative power? Huh? I think that's a challenge that is facing South Africa. I'm of a view, Chair, that we are not using power effectively to deal with issues that needs that imperious intervention from whoever who is wielding that power. And as parliamentarians, we have that power. It depends on us, how do we deliberately, consciously use that power to impact positively and effect quality, not just change, but quality change on the lives of people. Chairperson, that's my submission, and I was trying to also to respond to or comment to the issues that have been raised so that we isolate issues. When we isolate them, we don't say we deprecated this one, but then we drive the process as this committee. Because
thank you, Slalo. You were summarizing, you were flagging issues. I thought you were taking over, which is fine. Because you didn't pose the question. You were actually coming with a solution and a way forward. What I propose is that, can we just grab whatever food is there outside and have a working lunch? Just take what you want and come back here, and then we'll continue. We'll eat while we work. Honorable Nza,
To chip in, listening to SARIGA presentation, Chair, is saying to me, most this committee is about the permit. Some of the critical things that they have raised here, I would make a proposal that says things like the tedious process to the increase of councillors. Two, the issue of part-time councillors. I'm just making an example about those two. They don't reside in this committee, but those are critical things that need to be taken further. I would then suggest that SARIGA would make a presentation to the committee yeCOGTA at the NCOP, so that these things are taken somewhere, because they are not properly located to this particular committee, although there are critical things that need a solution which this committee cannot help. Yes, I understand they are part on the medical aid, but there are so serious issues that need that committee. So I'm making that proposal, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think it's a good proposal. You know, with the presentation of SALGA, it is a sore point. It's a very sad story. But I think also it's a presentation that is needed by Judge Moses' commission. Because I think what I heard a bit was he also wants to restructure, look at the best possible way for SALGA or councillors, local government, to function better, and also probably even doing away with part-time councillors. So I think, Honourable Nneta, that is one option, but we have to use different avenues. But it will also form part of our report, because it also is an important aspect on how this, what we're trying to achieve in Parliament, is impacted by those impediments and the salary structure of SALGA. Because SALGA, you heard from their presentation that they are willing to come. However, they cannot afford. If it's affordable, they're willing to all come in. But as I said, can we just grab something, come back? And everybody is invited to make an input. Parliaments, judges, everybody on anything, because it will strengthen our report. I'm sure 15 minutes, Jay, we grab and come back.
They keep up in it, so. Okay. They keep up in it. Like, I have friends in my neighborhood, like, who, and my children want to move to like, who even prepare houses, like, rehab places. Like, it's on my phone. Oh, I'll send it to you, Nana. I'll send it to you, Nana. I have to send him a picture of Sylvie. I'm seeing that picture. I'll send it to you just now. That's right. The one that I gave you, the picture on the Thursday, the one that I gave it to somebody else.
No. It's me that gave you.
Yeah.
The document.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm just... Maybe I'll put it on the animal stuff.
Not that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
This one.
Yeah. I thought that was going to also.
Eh?
I thought when I gave you. I thought
no, I have one already.
Did you sign?
I do for the monitoring stuff.
No, no. Did you sign this one?
No.
You
I don't sign the monitor.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
Is it your one or their one?
No, that's their one.
Oh.
My one is this one.
Which one is your one?
The one that's from the pictures.
Oh, okay.
But I thought that the other lady took it now. Not like most of the most of the people there, the Muslim children especially, you know, like book them into rehabs. Like, and it's like the thing that's going around campus now. That yeah, that like the law students are the most messed up ones. Yeah. And it's like the whole stigma thing around it.
Mm.
So that's why I said, dog, why didn't you even try like by the university?
Okay, that's a good idea. I never considered that.
Because you gotta keep, even like how many universities are in the world, no?
Mm.
And like how many, like, you know, like how many universities are there in the world,
yes.
And for UCT to be like the top.
Yeah.
Right. Out of all of those, it's so sad. So it's like, that's the epic though. Like, I mean, we even had and it was before him, also there was another person, also a lecturer or something. That didn't know.
How did you feel when you feel suicidal that time?
I don't know, like I wouldn't say suicidal though, like I just feel like the pressure, like for me, you know, is a lot of pressure. So like, I got a bursary, I must keep on my mark, I must not work, I must do a lot of things, like I must deal with family shit all the time.
Mm.
And then I must go do this, because like, I feel like also like a lot of people, and I didn't even know this until like I found out.
Are you not teaching, Jim?
No, no, I'm not hungry, thank you.
You're not too sure? Did you eat breakfast?
Yeah. But I'm not really hungry, I don't get hungry. I'm probably have a shake right now. I don't get hungry in the, like in the past 3 months I lost like 30 odd kg.
Sure.
Like I was like not chubby, actually I was chubby.
Okay.
And then I lost like 30 odd kg.
In how many months?
2.
2 months you lost 30 kg.
Yeah.
A lot of time.
Like if you check on my Instagram, you know, you just saw like how my followers went from like 1,000 to like somewhere like over 4,000 or 5,000.
Yeah. Is that
it went from like having 1,900 followers to like over 4,000 or 5,000 followers. Just like from losing weight and then. Like I think it's that.
abochebona abantu
sami. Hey, so I'm just saying, I'm saying, I'm just 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 saying, I